Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Narayanam namaskritya. Naram chaiva narottamam. Devim Saraswatim vyasam. Tato jayam udirayet. So today is chapter 27, text number 16 and 17. Nanalankaranam preshtam. Snanalankaranam preshtam. Achayam eva tut dava. Achayam eva tut dava.
Achayam eva tut dava.
Tantile tatva vinyaso.
Tantile tatva vinyaso.
Tantile tatva vinyaso. Vahnavajya plutam havi. Vahnavajya plutam hari. Surye chaba yahanam preshtam. Surye chaba yahanam preshtam. Salile saliladipi. Salile saliladipi. Shraddhayo paritam preshtam. Shraddhayo paritam preshtam. Bhaktena mama varyapi. Bhaktena mama varyapi. Snana. Bathing. Alankaranam. And decorating with clothing and ornaments. Preshtam. Is most appreciated. Archayam. For the deity form. Eva, certainly. Tu, and. Uddhava, O Uddhava. Standile, for the deity drawn upon the ground. Tattva vinyasa, establishing the expansions. And the potencies of the Lord within the various limbs of the deity by chanting the respective mantras. Vahno, for the sacrificial fire. Arjya, in ghee. Plutam, drenched. Havi, the oblations of sesame, barley, and so on. Surye, for the sun. Cha, hand. Abhyarhanam, the yoga meditation of 12 asanas and offerings of argya. Preshtam, most dear. Salile, for the water. Salila, adhipi, by offerings of water and so on. Shraddhaya, with faith. Uparitam, presented. Preshtam, most dear. Bhaktena, by the devotee. Mama, my. Vari, water. Api, even. Translation. In worshipping the temple deity, my dear Uddhava, bathing and decoration are the most pleasing offerings. For the deity traced on the sacred ground, the process of tattva vinyasa is most dear. Oblations of sesame and barley, soaked in ghee, are the preferred offering to the sacrificial fire. Whereas worship consisting of upasthan and argya is preferred for the sun. One should worship me in the form of water by offering water itself. Actually, whatever is offered to me with faith by my devotee, if only a little water, is most dear to me. Purport, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is present everywhere. The Vedic culture prescribes various ritualistic methods for worshipping the Lord in His various manifestations. The principal item is the faith and devotion of the worshipper, without which everything else is useless, as the Lord describes in the next verse, which we shall also read. Buryat ya bhakto paritam name to shayakalpate ghandodupa samanaso diponadhyam chakim puna. Translation. Even very opulent presentations do not satisfy me if they are offered by non-devotees. But I am pleased by any insignificant offering made by my loving devotees. And I am certainly most pleased when nice presentations of fragrant oil, incense, flowers, and palatable foods are offered with love. Purport. The Lord has stated in the previous verse that even a little water offered with love and devotion gives Him great pleasure. Therefore, the words Kim Puna indicate the Lord's complete happiness when a suitably opulent offering is made with love and devotion. But an opulent offering made by a non-devotee cannot please the Lord. As Srila Jiva Goswami explains, the rules and regulations concerning deity worship and the listing of offenses against the deities are all meant for helping one avoid precisely this kind of disrespectful or neglectful attitude towards the personality of Godhead in His deity form. In fact, all offenses against the deity are based upon irreverence and disregard for the Lord's position as master, and thus upon disobedience to His orders. Since one must worship the deity with reverence, one should offer opulent presentations to the deity with love. For such presentations both enhance the respectfulness of the worshipper and help him avoid offenses in his worship. So as we have been hearing, in this chapter, Lord Krishna is describing the process of worshipping the deity. And as probably you have also been hearing, there are various technical terms in the various verses which are describing various aspects within worship of the deity. For example, in 16 and 17, we have in the translation, and of course in the word for word, we have this tattva vinyasa. And in the word for word, it says, establishing the expansions and potencies of the Lord within the various limbs of the deity by chanting the respective mantras. And in the translation it says, for the deity traced on the sacred ground. So we may ask, why are people drawing deities on the ground? One reason is saintly persons often don't have a place of residence. They travel from village to village or live under tree to different various trees. And quite often they don't carry deities with them, because when we carry a deity form, naturally you're expected to set up the deity and dress and bathe and carry your paraphernalia. Nowadays, of course, many of the ISKCON Swamis, they often have a suitcase full of deity paraphernalia and their deities. And, you know, they take it on the plane and do all sorts of other things. But such facilities were not so practical when you have to walk by foot and when you don't have people carrying your suitcases, which in those days, you know, some however many hundreds or thousands of years ago, was not available. I mean, we don't read of the six Goswamis being followed by 10 or 15 people. They were alone and going from tree to tree and begging. Of course, in the modern world, things are very different. But, so therefore, it was not so practical for such devotees to have deities and carry paraphernalia and all of these other sorts of things. So what would they do? They would sit down, for example, on the bank of the Jamuna or wherever they happened to be, and they would draw a picture of the deity in the sand or in the dirt. And then, as it says here, in the word for word, they would touch the various limbs of the deity that's drawn on the sand or the earth or wherever, and they would chant various mantras. And technically, these are called nyasas. And even in the process of deity worship itself, devotees who worship the deity, if they do a very elaborate worship, then they will also chant nyasas on themselves. They will touch different parts of the body and chant different names of Lord Vishnu. Much like putting on tilak. We put on tilak, we all put on tilak. We touch different parts of our body and with the sacred clay, and then we chant a mantra. So in this way there are many such rituals for touching various parts of the body and chanting various mantras. So it's done for the pujari who is worshipping the deity, it's done for them. If one has a very elaborate procedure of worship, they chant nyasas on their bodies. And it's also done for the deity themselves. And why is that? The same reason that we put on tilak. Why do we put on tilak? To sanctify our body, to purify our body, and of course our consciousness at the same time. And the same is done for the deity. Of course we may ask, well, why are we doing it for the deity? The deity is already sanctified. The deity is already transcendental. For the same reason that Mother Yasoda, why would she chant? She would do the same thing upon Krishna. She would touch his body in various parts and chant different mantras. Why would she do that? Because she is wanting to, in this relationship, Krishna is dependent upon her. At least he acts like that. And actually he is dependent upon her. And therefore she does things for his protection. She, you know, touches different parts of his body and chants various mantras for his protection. So in a similar sense, the deity form of the Lord, certainly we all theoretically understand, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But as the deity, then he very much makes himself dependent upon the worship of the devotee. If we don't do anything, then the deity is not going to get up and do it for themselves. Sometimes, but in very rare occasions will they do that. Generally they wait, they could be waiting for a long time in some situations. You know, deities, by the arrangement of the Lord, sometimes they are left hundreds of years before they are found and worshipped again. The major deities of Vrindavan that were established by Krishna's great-grandson, they were left for thousands of years without being worshipped, externally anyway. So in the deity form of the Lord, this particular form of the Lord is dependent on the worship of the devotee. And as I think it was Gopa Vrindesh or the Prabhu who gave the class before. Ah, no, it was Gangeshwar Prabhu on Sunday. said, but if we begin to think that we're worshiping by our abilities and our, you know, expertise, then that would be very incorrect. That whatever we're able to do is by the inspiration of the Lord Himself. So, why do the devotees chant nyasas on the deity form of the Lord? For the same reason, because in the deity form the Lord is behaving in an independent fashion, and therefore the Lord, the devotee, will reciprocate by chanting nyasas or offering boga or doing artik or fanning. All of these sorts of things, why are they done? As an offering of service. So, back to our why do they draw pictures on the ground? Because they don't have deities that they carry with them, and nor do they have deity paraphernalia, and therefore they'll draw a picture of the deity on the ground and then more or less install the picture that's drawn on the ground through chanting various mantras and touching different parts of the limbs within the drawing. And then after the worship is over, then they'll just smother it. And that in the previous verses, Krishna was explaining that to Uddhava in text 14. The deity that is temporarily established can optionally be called forth and sent away. But these two rituals should always be performed when the deity is traced upon the ground. Bathing should be done with water, except if the deity is made of clay, paint or wood, in which cases a thorough cleansing without water is enjoined. So this is an example. Drawing on the ground is an example of drawing the form of the Lord, offering worship, installing the form of the Lord drawn on the ground by chanting, by doing this tattva vinyasa, by chanting various mantras and invoking various potencies of the Lord on the drawing, within the drawing. Then one does the worship, and then after the worship is over, then one requests the Lord to depart, and then one smothers the drawing and, you know, goes to the next village. So that's what's being referred to there. And then of course Krishna is also referring to the offerings, fire yagyas. And actually, if one reads the writings of Gopal Bhatta Goswami about deity worship, he writes the most technical prescription of deity, worshipping the deity. And part, one of the procedures is doing fire yagyas. That is part of the procedure of worshipping the deity. Of course, we know of fire yagyas for marriage or initiation and so on. But actually there's all sorts of varieties of yagyas, fire sacrifices. And one such variety is wherein one worships the deity through the fire. Because as Krishna has explained here, one can worship deity through water, with the mind, through paintings, earth, etc. So another way of worshipping the deity is through the fire. So in a very elaborate procedure, then part of the process of deity worship is worshipping the Lord through the fire. And in Mayapur, they still do that. Some of you may be familiar with Bhaktivedya Purna Swami. He began this part aspect of deity worship in 1984 or 83, and it's still going on to this day, morning and evening. Now I think they do morning and evening both. Twice a day they would be doing a fire sacrifice, morning and evening, and they still do it now after all of these years. They worship the deities through the fire sacrifice. And as it says, sesame and barley, in the word for word, should be drenched with ghee. But we don't drench the grains with ghee, because if we were doing that twice a day, that would be a lot of ghee over many years. So they don't put ghee. not in Mayapur anyway, in that particular ceremony, soaked in ghee. But we know in the Mahabharata there is the instance, which is also mentioned in the Krishna book, of the burning of the Kandava forest. Some of you might remember that pastime, where Agni Dev, he appeared to Krishna and Arjuna and said, "I have indigestion." And they said, "Well, why do you have indigestion?" And he explained there was some very religious king, don't remember the name, who was offering barley and sesame drenched in ghee, literally drenched in ghee. And he was offering, this king was offering so much ghee that Agni Dev developed indigestion, as he told Krishna and Balaram. And, sorry, Krishna and Arjuna. And they asked, "Well, how can we cure your indigestion?" And he replied, "I want to burn this Kandava forest. But whenever I try to burn this forest, Indra showers his rain and puts me out. Because in this forest, Indra had some friends, basically. Serpent friends, I think, and other demon friends were there in this particular forest that Agni Dev wanted to burn, to, you know, burn off all the ghee that he had been taking. But Indra kept putting the forest fire out with his rains. So he asked Krishna and Arjuna if they could, you know, keep him away. And of course that's what they did. That's the pastime that one can read in great detail in the Mahabharata. And then Agni Dev burnt the whole forest and destroyed a few demons in the process who happened to be somehow associates of Indra. And because of Krishna and Arjuna's protection, he could not disturb them. And in response, then Agni Dev gave Arjuna the chariot, I think, the chariot that he used, and he gave Krishna the disc, Sudarshan Chakra. And we read in the Puranas, in the Bhagavatam also, a very elaborate fire sacrifices where they would use all sorts of paraphernalia, gold and silver and so on, and then after the ceremony they would throw it away, much like we nowadays we use clay pots and so on, and after the ceremony then they're thrown away. So in the previous ages when they would do these elaborate fire sacrifices, and that is also what they would do, use them once and then throw them away. And of course we read if there was one slight mistake in the performance, then the whole ceremony is spoiled, completely spoiled, and then they have to do the whole thing all over again. But things can be done much more simply, and of course any ceremony becomes complete by the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. Even our deity worship, as we have heard a number of times, without the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, then it is not complete. And actually it's offensive in many ways. So the same for the performance of fire sacrifices. With the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, even though so many technical aspects may be incomplete, but by the chanting of the Lord's holy name, then it becomes very complete. So why all this? Why so much deity worship? Why is it so technical and elaborate and so on? That's described in the verse 18. And Jiva Goswami is quoted here. Rules and regulations concerning deity worship and the listing of offenses against the deities are all meant for helping one avoid precisely this kind of disrespectful or neglectful attitude toward the personality of Godhead in his deity form. And in the Nectar of Devotion, We all know there's one chapter, offenses to be avoided. And more or less, all of those offenses, if you read them, they're all related to the deity. There's 64 offenses, and then of course on top we have the offenses against the holy name, offenses against Vaishnavas, offenses against the holy Dham, and then the offenses for the deity, they're known as seva aparadhas. And basically all 64 are directly related to worship of the deity, particularly, more so to the pujari who is worshipping the deity. And we can, if we read them, one can tell that if we are a little bit careful, we can avoid all of the seva aparadhas. Of course, offenses against Vaishnavas and the holy name is somewhat more difficult. But the seva aparadhas, if one is careful, one can avoid them. Because mostly they're related to physical things that we do when we're in the temple. You know, our back towards the deity, for example, is one example. Or paying obeisances with one hand. It's such a common offense. Most, you know, so many devotees end up doing it, even after so many years. Paying obeisances with one hand. It's a very simple thing to avoid, actually. But why don't we avoid it? Because we are lazy, neglectful, or, you know, for an ISKCON term, spaced out. And many of the seva aparadhas are like that. They're really actually very simple things. Practical things, like paying obeisances with one hand, or one's back towards the deity. All little things that one can read, but because we're just neglectful, absent-minded, or lazy, then we tend to not be very careful. But if one is a little bit careful, then one will find that one's respect for the deity will naturally increase. Why? Because one is aware of the presence of the Lord. When we just charge into the temple and call someone or do whatever else we do, then we're not really always so aware of the presence of the Lord, of the deity. But if one is very carefully notes these various offenses to be avoided, naturally, one's respect for the presence of the Lord and one's awareness for the deity will naturally increase. One will see that if one practices to avoid these certain offenses. And as Jiva Goswami says here, as he is quoted, these, and why the opulent worship? For the same reason. So we acknowledge, or so we're reminded again and again and again, that the deity is non-different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We forget it all the time. It slips. Slips all the time. Because, you know, we're seeing, a piece of marble or a piece of wood or a piece of brass. And because we're not exactly very advanced, so we forget. We forget. Devotees can be, you know, taking a very, you know, focused darshan, and then all of a sudden the phone will ring, and what will they do? Answer it. Charge out of the temple and answer the phone. Taking a very devoted darshan of the deity, and the phone rings and they're charging out of the temple to answer it. So we forget, so easily we forget. We're taking our very focused devotional darshan and offering our prayers, and then the phone rings, you know, as if it's a life or death requirement, and then we charge out of the temple and answer it. In many cases, not all cases, but it's quite often to see such things happen. So we're very forgetful by nature, because we're conditioned in so many ways, we're very forgetful. And our mind is elsewhere in so many ways. Even when we are focused in our prayers, our mind is elsewhere. So there's these various external requirements, they are there. Why? Because internally we're not sufficiently prepared. Therefore we have all these external requirements to discipline us. And that, obviously, as we understand, the worship of the deity is pancharatrika vidhi. And it helps, very much helps, to discipline, regulate, standardize. I mean, if we can imagine, we can all imagine, if the deities, if we didn't have deities, even though we have the holy name and even though we have the Bhagavatam, but if we didn't have deities, probably a lot of devotees still wouldn't be getting up so early in the morning. Nor would a lot of devotees be visiting the temple regularly. Even though we have, you know, Bhagavat Marg, you know, this path of spontaneous devotion in the form of the Bhagavatam and the holy name and Harinam, etc. But without this Vidhi Marg, without this Pancharatrika Vidhi Marg of worshipping the deities, not as many people would be coming to the temple, not as many people would be offering service, not as many people would be giving donations for the pleasure of the Lord. This, it wouldn't, even though it's Kali Yuga, and the process is chanting the holy name of the Lord, but without the presence of the deity, a lot of people wouldn't, including us, a lot of people means us, a lot of us wouldn't be taking as much advantage as we do for chanting or hearing the Bhagavatam. And therefore, it's one of the five most essential items. There's 64 items of, we have 64 offenses, of course, and then we have our 64 dues. And as we know, there are five. Among 64, five are the most important. Who can tell me what they are? 64 items of devotion, of dues that Rupa Goswami tells us we should do. Among the 64, five of them are the most important. Who can tell me? Who's read the Nectar of Devotion? Oh, not everyone. Sorry? Residing in the holy place, yep. Sorry? Chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. Someone else? Worshipping the deity. Association of devotees. And reading, particularly hearing the Bhagavatam. So these are the five most essential points, practices within devotional service. And all the other rules that we read can be categorized under these five. Worshipping the deity, of course, is one. Chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. Hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. Residing in the holy place. And we do those things in the association of devotees. So these are the most essential practices of devotional service. And is one reason why Srila Prabhupada, not only him, but all the Sampradaya Acharyas, give so much importance to deity worship. Often it's also said deity worship is for neophytes. Why is it for neophytes? In the context that it helps to discipline and regulate ourselves. Without which we wouldn't, again, be waking up so early or coming to the temple so often if we knew Radha Vallabha wasn't here. Or if we didn't have to do the paraphernalia. Or do the artics or whatnot. It's certainly a motivating factor. And that's why it's for neophytes, but that doesn't mean only neophytes worship deities. We see all of the great acharyas, most of them have their personal deities. And as it is said elsewhere, they also very elaborately worship their deities in most cases also. I mean, Sanatana Goswami, you know, offering the chapatis without salt is an exception. And eventually, it wasn't the Lord's arrangement either. He wanted to be worshipped in a big temple. He didn't want to be worshipped in a tree. He wanted to be worshipped in a big temple. And of course, the story of Lord Jagannath is similar. He was worshipped by Sabaras in a village with roots and fruits and things like that. But he wanted to be worshipped in a kingly way. And therefore, he arranged for Indrajumna Maharaj to find him out, and then they built this elaborate temple and worshipped with, you know, 54 food offerings every day. So of course, as it is said in these verses, that the prime ingredient is devotion and faith when we worship the deity. And even if we offer a little bit of water, the Lord will accept it. True, but The Lord prefers opulent worship, particularly in temples, particularly in public temples. Why? Because he wants people to come and see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One devotee in Yugovardhan told us recently, he has a hairdressing business in Mwulumba. Oh, what was her name? Gora Shakti. She has a hairdressing business. And anyway, one of her customers found out she was a Hare Krishna and said, "Well, can I come to your temple?" So she brought this, I think this was an elderly lady, no contact with, you know, any sort of Krishna consciousness, brought her into the temple room, showed her the deities, and as she explained, the lady's mouth dropped. And she was more or less, not in a state of shock, but in a state of absorption, would be a better term. And she was just looking at no understanding whatsoever, but just looking at the deities for some minutes. And that's probably, you know, that's all the devotional service she might do in her life. But even when people see the deities, they have no, you know, belief, faith or understanding, but they think, wow, they're really beautiful. And that in itself is their beginning of their devotional service, just by appreciating the beauty of the Lord dressed as the deity, when he's dressed in his deity form. And people are troubled also by deity worship, because they have, at least in the Christian tradition, they have such an aversion to idols. And when they come into the temples, they, you know, in one sense, of course, they appear to be like idols. So at the same time, people have a lot of aversion. But if they see the deities dressed so beautifully, they can't help but appreciate they're at least beautifully dressed and decorated. And that in itself will be a great asset in their continuation of devotional service. So particularly in temple worship, deity worship is expected to be opulent. The Lord expects it to be opulent. Devotion, of course, is most important. Faith in worship, of course, is the most important. But we illustrate our devotion and faith in temple worship by the opulence of our worship. And not only does it certainly benefit us, but it gives so many people an opportunity to do service. I mean, after all, we find it very difficult to chant the Hare Krishna mantra. We can be honest about that. You know, we're lucky if we can do our 16 rounds every day relatively nicely. So it's hard to, and we certainly can't chant all day. Sometimes we do a special vrata, we can, but generally we can't chant all day. We need to be engaged. And when temples have deities, it gives so many, I mean, how many people are engaged in worshipping the deities in Melbourne? I don't mean just doing artiks, but doing the garlands, the paraphernalia, going shopping. I mean, it must engage 30 or 40 devotees. And you notice, in Melbourne you don't notice, but you see some temples really exist and continue to exist only because there's deities there. If there were no deities, probably the temple would have closed a long time ago and everybody would have gone. There are temples like that, but because the deities are there, at least somebody will stay there to worship the deities and the temple remain open and people continue to visit. But some temples really struggle, and the only reason they continue to exist, remain open, is because the deities are there. And the Lord in his archer avatar is really very merciful. That they, you know, stand there with lights blazing in their face, not always getting cooked prasadam. Sometimes it's too salty or too sweet or too hot or uncooked. But they're very happily standing on the altar day after day after day, giving us just why? So we can offer them some service. And all of these different rules and regulations that are mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion and elsewhere, they are there for us so we can increase our awareness that Krishna is there. I mean, he is actually there. And the more we can become aware of that, then the more reciprocation we will get from the Lord. If we wonder why our devotional service is not always so nourished or a bit dry, simple reason, because we're not aware of the presence of the Lord, either in His name or within the deity. Because we don't acknowledge His presence, even externally, at least externally we can acknowledge the presence by paying obeisances with two hands, for example, or not charging out of the temple when the phone rings. Even if we can do those little things, then certainly both the name, Krishna's name, and of course His deity, will reciprocate with our small offerings of service, and then we will feel nourished. We will feel nourished in our devotional practice, and then naturally what will we want to do? We'll want to do more service. If we're nourished, we'll want to do more service. We'll want to chant more and hear more and see the deities more and so on like this. And Prabhupada has established the worship of the deities within ISKCON in such a way that he's very much simplified, you know, the rituals of worshipping the deity, but he has covered every single required aspect also. I mean, if one reads, for example, this particular chapter and other places that elaborately describes the process for worshipping the deity, one will see very easily that Prabhupada's standards of how he established deity worship has covered every single required aspect. Maybe not in as technical a way, but certainly he's covered it. And various devotees around the world, again by Prabhupada's mercy, they have, in some cases, they fulfill all the technical needs of their worship also in a very natural way. And the whole purpose again is to become more and more aware that the deity is non-different from the Lord, of course that the name is non-different from the Lord also. And then if we can consciously cultivate that awareness through carefully avoiding the offenses, then, and as Jiva Goswami said, the primary offense is what? Is disrespect. Disregard and disrespect. That's disrespect. Why are we inattentive when we chant? Really because we're disregarding the name of Krishna. Why do we offensive when we offer, you know, when we do our worship? Because we're lazy. We're disregarding the presence of the Lord. And all of these things are to help us enhance our respect, and of course when our respect is enhanced, naturally the deity and the name will reciprocate with us more, and then when we get that reciprocation, naturally our faith will be enhanced also, that our faith will be strengthened. And then, you know, it's a carry-on effect, and everything increases. So this is the mercy of the deity form of the Lord, who the Archa Avatar, who mercifully stands there on our altars and gives us all an opportunity to offer service. And really, we might think it's very easy to walk in the temple and take darshan, but really it's an honor. This is the Lord's home. And everything we do here, exactly the same things we do in the spiritual world. I mean, if we go back to Goloka Vrindavan, what are we going to be doing? Making garlands, making giwiks, stitching, cleaning the temple during kirtan, cooking. I mean, what else are they doing there? That's all they're doing. Cleaning. So everything that we do here in our temple worship, this is exactly the same things we'll be doing there. And of course, Krishna will be there as he is here now. The only difference might be he'll be responding a lot more because we're more pure in heart and we actually have some devotion. But this is what we are doing in the spiritual world, what we will be doing, and therefore obviously we need to practice externally so we can do it properly, you know, make a good giwik or cook, you know, good prasadam or make a beautiful garland. Of course we have to learn the externals of doing things properly. But certainly the internals are also required. And the internal, of course, is the offering of love and devotion and faith. And if we can do both, then certainly the deity and the name will reciprocate. And we see devotees, even very neophyte devotees, we're all neophyte devotees, we can develop relationship with the deities. And that very much is our grounding grace. And it's, again, it's a privilege. To walk into the temple of the Lord is a privilege. It might seem to be an easy thing to do, but many people don't do it. Many devotees don't do it, even, for whatever reasons. So the fact that we are able to, it really is an honor and a privilege that we can walk in and take darshan of the deities and chant Hare Krishna. The other day, I think it was Nanda Mandir, he was doing the Shalagram Puja. And so he said, oh, I'm not qualified. I don't know how I'm doing it, but I'm not qualified. And I said, well, we're not qualified to do anything. Whether it's doing Shalagram Puja or even walking into the temple or even making diwigs. Actually, we're not qualified to do any of these things. But by the mercy of the deity, we have opportunities to do all of these things. And if we take proper advantage, if we take nice advantage, then the deity will be pleased with us. And then we'll be happy. And we'll be happy to offer more service. And therefore, so much is being talked about here, about worshipping the deity. Okay, I'll finish here. Any questions or comments? Thank you. Grantharashyamad Bhagavatam ki.